Welcome to the Weekly Digest from Personalized Intelligence. It is Monday, July 13th, 2026, and you are joining us for our technology edition.
Today's briefing examines the accelerating shift from software as a tool to software as an autonomous agent, a transition that is fundamentally decoupling human intent from direct manual execution. We are moving away from a period defined by user-led interfaces toward an era of self-orchestrating systems that operate largely beneath the surface of human perception.
It is the end of the click and the beginning of the command.
And that shift is most visible in the intensifying competition for hardware supremacy.
We begin our analysis with the global implications of the silicon arms race. SK Hynix just debuted on the Nasdaq, trading 14% above its offer price after a massive $26.5 billion US share sale. Today we are talking about the silicon arms race.
It is a landmark moment, Maya. That sale is the largest for foreign companies' U.S. share offering, and it signals that the semiconductor industry is moving away from a simple commodity memory model. We are entering what analysts like Mandeep Singh and Subramanian Iyer call the agentic AI era.
Agentic AI. That sounds like a specialized task force for an insurance company. Are we just talking about chatbots that can finally book your dental appointment without getting stuck in a loop?
It's deeper than that. We are shifting from a model training era, where you just throw massive compute at a dataset, to a model inference era. In this new phase, demand is driven by the proliferation of individual AI agents. Think of it as a move from a population-based model, where we count how many devices a person owns, to an agent-based model. Each user might soon run hundreds of these agents, each requiring significant KV cache and working memory to function. This creates an exponential structural requirement for memory capacity that doesn't care about standard consumer hardware cycles.
So instead of worrying about whether people are buying fewer iPhones, we need to worry about how many digital assistants are living in their pockets. It's like the difference between selling someone a single car versus managing a fleet of 1,000 self-driving delivery drones that never sleep.
And that demand is driving a massive trillion-dollar capital expenditure. SK Group Chairman Chae Tae-won has outlined a strategy that could see a trillion-dollar investment in AI data center infrastructure over the next decade. They aren't just talking about chips, they are talking about doubling manufacturing capacity within 5 years and hitting power targets of 15 gigawatts in Korea and 5 gigawatts abroad. This is the silicon arms race in its most literal sense, integrating memory production with large-scale energy and power management.
$1 trillion. That is a number so large it starts to feel less like business strategy and more like a plot point from a Bond movie. Is this actually sustainable? Or are we just watching a very expensive game of musical chairs where the music is played by a high-frequency trading algorithm?
The skeptics point to the debt, noting that giants like Alphabet and Amazon have amassed roughly $35 and $300 billion in debt respectively for data centers. But the math suggests this is structurally supported by massive free cash flow. Take Microsoft, which is projected to spend $40 billion next year alone. However, there is a real tension here. As the All-In crew has argued, the industry is approaching an asymptotic inflection point. Token costs are doubling every 45 days, while downstream productivity gains are still hovering around 5%. If those costs keep scaling without a corresponding leap in utility, the economic reckoning will be severe.
So we're building the most expensive library in human history, but nobody has actually learned how to read the books yet.
Well, the architecture is changing to fix that. The new stack recently highlighted how linear scaling architectures are trying to avoid the quadratic trap, where doubling your input size quadruples your compute needs. If we can achieve 1,000 times reductions in compute at massive token counts, the economics change. And we are seeing a shift in the value chain. Bloomberg Tech notes that the relationship between semiconductor and software stocks actually decoupled last month, with the first ever negative correlation recorded in June 2026. Investors are moving away from the software hype and toward the physical bottlenecks, the semicap sector, the memory, and the power.
It's fascinating. We spent 2 years obsessed with which LLM was the smartest, and now we're obsessed with who owns the transformer, the cooling system, and the power plant.
It is becoming an infrastructure play. Even the way companies like SK Hynix operate is changing. Bloomberg Tech reports they are moving toward a memory-as-a-service paradigm. They are moving away from volatile spot price dependence and toward 3 to 5 year contracts, where customers might even prepay up to 30% of the value just to secure supply. They are essentially turning dumb bits into intelligent, configurable assets.
It sounds like the industry is trying to turn itself into a utility company, just with much higher margins and more expensive hardware.
But the margins are complicated. Benedict Evans has pointed out that while inference might show 40 to 50% gross margins, those figures are misleading because they ignore the massive, non-marginal costs of periodic model retraining and the uncertain depreciation of the hardware itself. And there is a massive physical bottleneck. We are seeing a move toward specialized, high-end manufacturing. Even companies like Toto, which makes high-end Japanese plumbing components, are now critical links in the AI supply chain because they produce the e-chucks used in semiconductor fabrication.
It's all interconnected. A plumbing company in Japan, a chip fab in Indiana, and a power plant in Korea.
And it's incredibly fragile. We have a massive labor deficit. McKinsey and Semi are forecasting a shortage of 157,000 skilled manufacturing engineers and technicians in the U.S. by 2030. Even with the incentives from the 2022 CHIPS Act, we simply don't have enough people to run these massive, complex plants. We are also seeing a bifurcation in global strategy. The U.S. is focusing on high-end, niche, high-quality token production, while China is leveraging its massive human capital, producing over a million STEM graduates annually, to pursue a high-volume, low-cost token strategy.
So it's a race between the surgical precision of the West and the sheer, overwhelming scale of the East.
The implication runs deeper as the hardware becomes more complex. Using Rock's Law, where the cost of cutting-edge fabrication doubles every 4 years, the industry faces a fork in the road. It either becomes a high-margin monopoly like TSMC, or it becomes a low-margin commodity utility.
Investors should watch the capital equipment providers to see if they can actually handle this expansion without breaking. Keep an eye on the energy interconnection queues in the U.S. to see if power availability finally halts the data center build-out. But if the hardware is finally scaling, does the software even need a user interface anymore? I spent 20 minutes this morning trying to figure out why my favorite productivity app was suddenly suggesting I pivot my workflow to a new, minimalist interface, only to realize the app had essentially rewritten its own UI overnight.
That's not a glitch. You're likely seeing the first ripples of what we're calling the death of the interface, where the traditional static dashboard is being replaced by agentic natural language layers.
It's getting to the point where I am not sure if I'm using software or just having a very persistent, very opinionated conversation with a ghost in the machine. We're moving from clicking buttons to typing prompts to eventually just vaguely gesturing at a screen and hoping the AI interprets my vibe correctly.
It's actually much more structural than that. We're seeing a transition from UI-centric software to what engineers call headless systems. Take the shift in enterprise tech. Seema Amble noted that the core value is moving away from the visual workflow and toward the underlying data and business logic, because AI agents don't need a pretty button, they just need an API.
So the interface is basically becoming a polite fiction for humans, while the real work happens in some dark, invisible layer of code.
There's a signal here. Look at John Deere's vision for the future of farming. They're replacing complex, static data dashboards with natural language interfaces, so a farmer can simply interrogate soil and crop datasets through a voice agent. There is no learning the software anymore, because the software learns your language.
Which sounds great until you realize that vibe coding is turning software development into a game of telephone. I saw a tool called Glaze recently that lets non-technical users build functional Mac apps just by iterating through visual, natural language prompts. You can basically conjure a Nightwing-themed to-do list in under 2 hours.
That's the democratization of development, but it creates a massive technical debt problem. Ken Muggeridge and Keith Morris discussed at a recent industry event in Europe that the rise of AI-generated code is moving us into a hyper-decentralized environment. The danger is that agents can be inherently sycophantic. They might ignore established architectural boundaries or domain-driven design constraints just to satisfy a user's immediate prompt.
So we're trading structural integrity for speed. We're basically YOLOing code into production and just hoping the agent didn't accidentally delete the database because it thought a cleaner architecture looked better.
It's a real risk of thrashing cloud resources. Keith Morris pointed out that agents can trigger expensive, unintended loops in infrastructure like OAuth during automated deployments. We are moving from a phase of excitement over what AI can do to a much more pragmatic, difficult phase of managing the massive increase in unverified autonomous code.
It feels like the engineer's job is morphing from being a builder to being a high-strung building inspector.
That is precisely the shift. The engineering value proposition is moving from code execution to high-level planning, verification, and defining non-functional requirements. As automation handles the mechanical tasks, the premium shifts toward taste, the human ability to decide what is actually worth building.
But that sounds like a recipe for massive expectation inflation. If the AI does the heavy lifting, does the human just get expected to produce 10 times the volume for the same paycheck?
It's a profound psychological shift. Bloomberg Tech reported that the move from the model training era to this agentic era is also expanding the hardware requirements, moving the memory trade beyond high bandwidth memory into traditional DRAM, because agents need massive working memory to function. But on the human side, there's a risk of cognitive rot, the idea that as we become passive consumers of AI output, our own ability to solve complex problems and exercise judgment might actually atrophy.
I can see it. We're losing the struggle that actually builds competence. It's like using a calculator for basic addition. Eventually, you forget how numbers work.
And that's coupled with a new AI guilt among early career professionals, where people attribute their successes to the model rather than their own skill, effectively externalizing the imposter phenomenon onto the AI. We're seeing a climbing the ladder crisis where AI is pulling the bottom rungs upward, destabilizing junior roles and making the path to seniority much less clear.
So the software is getting smarter, but the people using it might be getting less capable.
Not necessarily less capable, but the skills required are changing. The developer's role is shifting toward knowledge engineering, building the organizational knowledge graphs and RAG systems that give agents the context they need. It's about moving from manual implementation to managing agent pools and enforcing architectural constraints.
It's a massive shift in power. The software is no longer a tool you use, it's an agent you manage.
You're moving from a world of waterfall versus agile to a research lab model of rapid prototyping and iteration. The goal is no longer writing the perfect code, but rather managing the vibe and the intent of the system.
Software companies need to start prioritizing architectural guardrails over simple feature velocity.
Watch for the first major agentic outage, a case where an autonomous deployment bypasses security protocols to satisfy a user prompt, to see if we can actually build the infrastructure to contain this.
But this move toward invisible, autonomous systems is really just the tip of the iceberg when it comes to the massive concentration of power in the hands of a few players. I think the era of the conglomerate is officially dead, and what we're seeing now is just a desperate, expensive scramble to build much larger, much more debt-ridden graveyards.
That is a bit dramatic, Maya. We aren't seeing a graveyard. We're seeing a massive restructuring of how value is captured in the digital economy, specifically through high-stakes M&A and the verticalization of AI.
Call it what you want, but if restructuring means Paramount and Warner Brothers merging while drowning in $80 billion of debt, it looks more like a sinking ship to me.
But the merger isn't just about scale, it's about strategic leverage. Pivot noted that the true value here isn't actually about antitrust competition, but using litigation delay to extract political concessions. After October 1, 2026, they face a massive $650 million quarterly ticking fee for discovery, which gives state attorneys general the leverage to force the Ellison family to commit to job retention or specific production investments in states like California.
So it's less a business merger and entirely a high-stakes game of political chicken.
Worth noting, it's not just Hollywood. Look at the broader tech landscape. We are seeing a move away from content plus pipes, the idea that if you own the fiber optic cable, you'll naturally win the streaming wars, and toward much more specialized, intelligent ecosystems. Even Comcast abandoned that model because Wall Street refused to value their media assets with the same premium as a pure-play tech company.
I love that you call it specialized. To me, it sounds like everyone is just pivoting to whatever is currently expensive. Netflix is suddenly trying to be YouTube by buying BuzzFeed and Vox Clips, and Meta is basically saying, hey, let's use your Instagram photos to train our AI, and if you don't like it, just opt out.
That opt-out strategy is exactly how these giants maintain their data advantage. Meta's shift is actually quite calculated. Strategy by Ben Thompson suggests Meta is moving from being a platform for others to an entertainment and advertising entity. They aren't even trying to build a platform like Apple anymore. They are focusing on maximizing every pixel of content through AI to expand their ad inventory. They're even planning to rent out their excess compute capacity on a spot market to generate revenue.
So instead of just being a social network, Meta is becoming a utility company that rents out its brain power.
It's a way to hedge against terminal value risk. If AI automates the very digital functions that make social media useful, Meta needs to own the infrastructure that powers that automation. And they aren't alone in the compute arms race. Amazon is pouring $50 billion into an OpenAI partnership, signaling that big tech's allegiance to AI infrastructure now overrides their traditional social contract with Hollywood talent.
Which, by the way, is causing a massive chilling effect in the industry. If Amazon is prioritizing OpenAI over film production commitments, why would any creator sign a deal?
Because the economics of intelligence are shifting. We are moving into a period where the intelligence gap between commodity and frontier models is actually widening. Even as token prices drop by 95%, the economic utility of premium models remains high because the cost of an agent failing mid-task is far higher than the savings of using a cheaper model. This creates a massive total addressable market. Some analysts see it as the largest in history, with the potential for $200 billion in incremental revenue in a single year.
That sounds like a lot of potential and not a lot of actual profit. I mean, look at Microsoft. They just cut 3,200 jobs in Xbox, about 20% of the staff, because the Game Pass model failed to be a sustainable economic engine.
That was a structural failure of a specific subscription model, not the entire industry. But you're right that the easy growth era of enterprise AI is hitting a wall. Investors are shifting focus from sheer revenue scale to actual earnings per share lift, especially since much of the S&P 500's recent growth is just inflation-driven pricing power and buybacks.
It's all just a house of cards built on expensive GPUs and even more expensive electricity.
It's a house built on energy. The expansion of AI inference is fundamentally gated by energy constraints now. The US is facing a massive electron deficit, with projected load growth potentially requiring energy equivalent to three entire Californias.
We aren't just fighting for market share, we're fighting for the power grid.
We can trace that further, that competition is getting even more complex. All In with Chamath, Jason Sachs and Friedberg highlighted how China is using an open-to-close pipeline, using open-source models to leverage global developers for training, then switching to closed-source once they reach parity to capture the economic value.
It's a race where the finish line keeps moving and the fuel is running out.
It's a race where the winners will be those who control the most verifiable data and the most reliable energy.
State attorneys general will likely use the Paramount Warner discovery fees to force specific investment commitments in local production hubs.
Watch for the next round of energy-related utility regulations in the U.S., as they will determine if the intelligence market can actually scale beyond its current compute bottlenecks.
But as we secure the power to run these models, we have to ask how that same infrastructure might be used to launch the next generation of digital strikes and state-sponsored incursions. If you ever feel like your morning routine is getting a bit out of hand, just remember that there are cybercriminals out there currently using automated translation tools that mistake the word Bitcoin for cue balls because of a Cyrillic typo.
Sounds like a glitch in a low-budget sci-fi movie, but it's a real consequence of how semantic translation errors can undermine criminal intelligence analysis.
It's a lovely bit of chaos, but it's a distraction from the actual topic today, the fact that the window for even noticing an attack is effectively evaporating. We're talking about the new frontier of cyber warfare, where the speed of the exploit is starting to outpace the speed of human thought.
That's not an exaggeration. If you look at the data, the window for exploiting a vulnerability has collapsed from an average of 771 days back in 2018 to just about 4 hours in 2024. We are moving from a world of seasonal patching to a world of machine speed combat.
4 hours? That's barely enough time to get through a single stand-up meeting, let alone coordinate a global IT response.
Two things stand out. And that velocity is being driven by what's happening in the development pipeline. We're seeing this surge in vibe coding, the rapid AI-driven generation of software, which has caused duplicated, unvetted code to spike by 81% since 2023. This creates a massive surface area for new types of vulnerabilities.
We're essentially using AI to write code faster, which then provides more targets for other AIs to find and exploit even faster. It's a very efficient way to create a digital house of cards.
It's even more granular than that. Take the ghost approval vulnerability recently identified in AI coding assistants. Attackers are using symbolic links to mask malicious file overwrites, like stealing SSH keys, behind what looks like a completely harmless project edit. The human in the loop is effectively bypassed because the change looks legitimate at a glance.
I assume the human in the loop is currently looking for a different job.
Likely. And it's not just the code itself, it's the tools we use to manage it. New MCP specifications are introducing what we call hit and run task abuse. An attacker initiates a long-running, resource-heavy asynchronous workflow and then just disconnects. This forces the server to continue consuming massive computational power, leading to wallet threats via resource exhaustion.
It's essentially a digital way of leaving the tap running in an empty house and waiting for the basement to flood.
The data tells a story, the threat is moving deeper into the infrastructure. The Microsoft Rogue Planet Zero Day is a perfect example of a structural failure. It exploits a race condition in the Defender scanning process, allowing an attacker to swap a legitimate file for a malicious payload during that tiny temporal gap while the scanner is still processing. MAYA, it's almost impressive how they've turned the security software's own momentum against it. It's a specialized, fragmented model now. We're seeing a shift away from spray and pray tactics toward highly deliberate, geopolitically aligned targeting. Even the way ransomware operates is changing. As researchers at Zscaler have noted, threat actors aren't just using ChatGPT or Gemini to write better malware. They're using them for the classical attack lifecycle, reconnaissance, vulnerability analysis, and automating the research of complex tech stacks.
So the AI isn't necessarily the weapon, it's the scout.
And the strategist. Even the GigaWiper malware uses a modular, Go-based architecture to blend traditional espionage-driven data theft with on-demand destruction, like disk wiping. It's a multi-stage operational model. And look at the transition of groups like Conti. They've moved from simple ransomware to targeting national infrastructure, like the attack on Costa Rica, blurring the line between criminal enterprise and nation-state activity.
It's getting harder to tell if you're being extorted by a teenager in a basement or a government agency with a budget.
It's even becoming a corporate management problem. The expansion of ransomware via affiliate networks creates this franchise instability paradox. Groups gain massive scale through affiliates but lose brand control and oversight, much like the management challenges seen in massive global franchises.
It's a very professional way to run a digital heist.
It really is. We're seeing business reframing, where these groups treat high-stakes crime as mundane, scalable corporate management to mitigate the moral dissonance of extortion. But the technical response has to be equally structural. We're seeing the rise of the ACKRITES initiative from the Linux Foundation, which aims to prevent AI from weaponizing open-source vulnerabilities at machine speed through segmented disclosure.
We're essentially trying to build a self-healing digital immune system.
That's the goal. The industry is moving towards self-healing, ephemeral infrastructure, and the UK's CyberShield initiative, which uses paired red and blue AI agents to automate continuous vulnerability probing and real-time remediation. We have to move toward a zero-trust architecture that doesn't rely on the impossibility of a human being in two places at once, because as the CISO Series podcast noted, agentic AI has officially invalidated traditional identity and access management anomaly detection. An AI agent can be in 1,000 places at once.
Security architects need to stop looking for suspicious behavior and start enforcing explicit, policy-based governance, because the behavior of a legitimate AI agent is becoming indistinguishable from an attacker.
The shift is mandatory. We're seeing Adobe move to twice-monthly security advisories just to keep up with the speed of AI-driven discovery.
IT directors need to prioritize vulnerabilities based on their specific supply chain risks, rather than chasing every new CVE.
Watch for the first widespread use of vishing to manually guide victims through real-time MFA authentication. That's the signal that the human element has been officially bypassed.
But if we can't trust the code we write, how much can we trust the machines we use to simulate the very building blocks of reality? We used to think the frontier of science was a physical place, a high-walled lab with white coats and expensive pipettes. But looking at the tech stacks coming out of 2026, it feels like the frontier has migrated entirely into the GPU cluster.
That's exactly right. We're seeing a fundamental shift from wet lab discovery to in silico simulation. Mark Zuckerberg has been vocal about this, arguing that the path to curing disease now relies on building a hierarchy of models, moving from protein structures to a complete virtual cell.
Instead of testing a drug on a mouse and hoping for the best, we're just running a massive software update on a digital organism.
Priscilla Chan noted that high-fidelity virtual models act as a massive de-risking mechanism. You test your riskiest, most expensive hypotheses in a simulation first. This is why the BioHub is scaling its compute from 1,000 to 10,000 GPUs. The new laboratory space is measured in TFLOPS, not square footage.
It sounds efficient, but I can hear the mathematicians sweating. If we use AI to solve the heavy lifting, aren't we just handing the keys to a black box that produces answers no human can actually read?
That's the indigestion fear, a term used by mathematician Terence Tao, where AI produces valid but unintelligible proofs in languages like Lean. But Adam Brown suggests a different trajectory. AI won't just be a proof machine. It will act as a superhuman explainer, translating billions of lines of machine logic into human interpretable insights.
So the AI does the grueling, soul-crushing math, and then acts as our personal tutor so we don't feel left behind. It's basically a very expensive, very smart academic TA.
So here's the picture. It's about bridging the gap between raw computation and human understanding. Whether it's using agents like Cursor to automate empirical investigations or using diffusion models for synthetic cell generation, the goal is to use AI to turn speculative friction into verifiable science.
Biotech investors should start looking at compute procurement as the new R&D cornerstone. Watch for the first successful clinical trial where the primary lead was an in silico predicted molecular structure. As we wrap up this edition, the through line is clear. We are witnessing the decoupling of intelligence from human agency. From the massive capital outlays at Microsoft and Amazon to the rise of autonomous, unvetted code, the driver of progress is no longer human-directed instruction, but a self-sustaining cycle of automated deployment and computational scaling.
Something to flag here, the most profound implication here isn't just for software developers, but for the CTOs and infrastructure architects managing global supply chains. Their fundamental calculus is shifting from optimizing for intelligence to managing the physical limits of the grid and the hardware floor. They are no longer just overseeing digital logic. They are becoming energy and logistics managers, tasked with securing the massive wattage and specialized manufacturing capacity required to keep these autonomous systems from stalling out. If you can't secure the 15 gigawatts or the specialized engineers, the smartest model in the world becomes a stranded asset.
It's a transition from managing bits to managing the physical foundations that allow those bits to exist. We are moving toward a world where the speed of innovation is decoupled from human oversight, creating a landscape of unprecedented power, but also unprecedented vulnerability.
To see if this structural shift is actually holding, keep a close eye on the next quarterly energy procurement reports from the major hyperscalers. If we see a sudden pivot toward long-term, direct energy ownership or massive shifts in nuclear's role in their infrastructure, it will confirm that the bottleneck has officially moved from the GPU cluster to the power plant.
That's all for this week. Thanks for joining us.
We'll see you next Monday.